Live from the center of the Razorback universe.
The only radio show Razorback fans need to listen to.
Unbiased and unafraid.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ruskin and Zach.
All right, we're back with you here on Ruskin and Zach. Of course, we are with you until the bottom of the hour. Arkansas and Tennessee basketball on our air coming up here in a little bit, but in the meantime, we're going to talk some college football with Tim Brando from Fox Sports, who's kind enough to join us. Tim, it's a good to talk to you again. Hope you're doing well.
Okay, but which one is Ruskin and which one is Zach?
Okay.
I'm confused.
The better-looking one is Zach.
That is accurate. That is accurate. You were on the phone with Zach. We sound a lot alike. We hear people talk about this a lot, Tim, but I am Derek Ruskin, and Zach Arnes is my partner that you've been conversing with to set all this up. So,
well, here's the thing. One of you needs to develop a rasp.
Okay.
So that people can tell that work on a little rasp in your voice.
Well, we'll get the menthols.
One of us will start smoking menthols.
We'll deliver.
We'll send out for some Pall Malls and get that.
You know, these are just broadcasting tips from Timmy B. You know, I'm doing the best I can.
You are one of the best to ever do it. So any tip you give, we're probably going to utilize here. So we all of us here, you included, love the sport of college football, and we are at a really interesting kind of crossroads moment with this sport where even people on the network that carry the playoff are admitting that this is the worst postseason that exists in sports. So I know we've talked about this before, but it's just, Tim, what does this sport need to do here with this playoff? And do they expand it? Do they dump it? What should they do?
Well, we'll find out, you know, during the off season if the ramifications financially from COVID, you know, necessitate a quicker change than maybe some of the apologists for the process, you know, will have you believe. And when I say apologists for the process, I'm obviously talking about the CFP office and what's regurgitated pablum that we consistently get from Bill Hancock in every conference call he ever does or every interview he ever does. And the same would be true with whoever the spokesperson for the process is on Tuesday nights with Reese Davis. This year it was Gary Barta, a good man from Iowa, the athletic director there. But, you know, it's hard to get on national TV and defend the indefensible, which is what this process is. So, but we've hemorrhaged money this year in college athletics. And with the name, image, and likeness legislation that's in front of everyone in college athletics now, the need for greater revenue has never been more obvious. And we're talking about, even at the power schools in the so-called Power Five, losing somewhere in the neighborhood between $40 and $80 million this year. And that's on gate receipts alone. It would have been far worse had they not had television, you know, without the television rights being paid up by ESPN and by the company I work for, Fox, all of these major conferences wouldn't be, you know, they'd be in even worse shape. So, look, the championship game, they got lucky. They got really lucky. I thought Clemson would blow out Ohio State, as did a lot of other people. I don't think the rating for Clemson-Alabama game would be nearly as great as the rating will be for this Ohio State-Alabama game. Two major reasons. Ohio State from the Big Ten, densely populated area, and clearly Columbus, Ohio, along with Birmingham, Alabama, are the two biggest, highest-rated TV markets for college football on a regular basis. So they're going to have a very successful title game, whether it's played, you know, this coming Monday or the next Monday, as the case may be. As of our conversation today, I gather there's a little more rumbling, but not as much today as there was yesterday. But they got very lucky with that. But they also, I think, were exposed, although they got lucky again, when Cincinnati spit the bit with third and two and mismanaged the clock and allowed Georgia time enough to get a 53-yard field goal to beat the Bearcats. Because if Cincinnati had finished undefeated, the narrative this week would have been far different. I mean, it would have been far, far different. And it was just a coaching mishap on the part of Luke Fickell. They didn't have to make that first down, but they damn sure needed to run the football. And they didn't. Georgia had no timeouts left. They were enabled to get a victory by virtue of really poor coaching with the clock late in that game. So those two factors will help the CFP apologists to some extent. And this rating for this title game will be awfully good. But that doesn't stop the corrupt nature of this system and the fact that it has been exposed. And if you happen to see what the rating was for the Cincinnati-Georgia game on television, it was by far and away the highest-rated New Year's Six Bowl that had nothing to do with the playoff. So people want to see games that matter. And any team playing Cincinnati on New Year's Day mattered to the viewers. Now imagine if that Cincinnati game had actually been for something, okay, other than Cincinnati trying to prove a point that they deserve to be in. Okay, what if it had really been a playoff game? You know, well, that's the problem, and that has to be fixed. And my only question now is, will those in governance force the hand of the rights holder to make changes? If I were, and I'm not, but if I were ESPN, I certainly would be looking at this and saying to myself, my God, we're not getting nearly the ratings that we deserve for all the money that we're spending here. Well, you know, they don't need my help, but they're getting a bad deal. They need to have more games, more inventory, and if they had more inventory, there would be greater revenue. The advertising dollar would spend a lot better. And if we have to wait five more years for this god-awful deal to come to a halt before we get to eight, I guess we'll just have to wait. But we will get to eight in 5 years. That will definitely happen. When this thing is up and networks will have a chance to bid on this, it will not be worth what has been paid for four teams. It will be worth what's being paid for eight teams or more. And I honestly don't think we need to have more than eight. I think that's the number that we should settle on. And we should get there sooner than later. If I were them, and I'm not, okay, I don't presume to know their books, but if I were them, their programmers, I would say, you know what? We have the right to look at the fine print here. We need to make some changes with this because we're not getting the bang for the buck that we paid.
I'm probably in the minority. I think 4 teams, 8 teams, 16 teams, I think we're going to wind up with the same result. Is you're going to wind up with 2 or 3 the same teams over and over and over again. My problem is really with the selection process, and we've asserted on this show many times that the college football playoff is simply a television show. And it's not the 4 best teams, it's the 4 best teams that you're going to watch. I think that's how Ohio State gets in. I think that's how Notre Dame gets in, is that people will watch them. Are you sort of in that mindset where sort of judging the college football playoff committee's selection process?
Yeah, absolutely. It's corrupt. It's absolutely corrupt. It's made up of, there's no diversity, really. I mean, have you seen anybody like Condoleezza Rice?
No.
Replace Condoleezza Rice? I haven't. You got a bunch of old coaches that see the game through the same prism, and you've got, athletic directors of institutions within the Power Five that, have that same sort of view, and many of them have been on the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee through the years. And, in the end, it doesn't matter what, it's clear it doesn't matter what Cincinnati or Coastal Carolina or Boise State or you name that team, UCF, it doesn't matter what those teams do, okay? There's no criteria, there's no objectivity within the criteria to suggest that they will get a fair shake. For Cincinnati to get passed over twice from the sixth position by a two-loss Iowa State team, and by the way, I was high on Iowa State. I thought the Big 12 had a hell of a year. Didn't have a great team, but they had a hell of a year. But But Ohio State didn't get passed, and they didn't play for 3 weeks either. Well, there's only one reason for that. Cincinnati is Cincinnati, and Ohio State is Ohio State. And the answer that Gary Barta gave on that last Tuesday, when I finally went off on Twitter and I said, you know, enough. This isn't just flawed, it's corrupt. And I'll never call it a college football playoff again. It's the P5 Invitational. When he said that the reason that Iowa State got past Cincinnati was because they had a huge win over Texas, I just lost it. I mean, did he not realize that they were in the midst of trying to get Urban Meyer to take over for Tom Herman at the time he made that statement? It's not like Texas, even in Texas's mind and their fan base's mind, they weren't very good, okay? But it mattered that Iowa State beat Texas at Texas, so much so that they passed by an undefeated Cincinnati. I mean, that's a crock. That's an absolute crock. And poor Reese Davis, it didn't matter what he had, what follow-up question he had, he wasn't going to get a legitimate response from Gary Barta. I mean, he wasn't. So that's the problem. And to people that say, well, you know, why are we just giving everybody a trophy and a ribbon and, you know, we're having a hard time finding a fourth team. Why do we go to, want to go to 6, 7, or 8? I'm like, that's not the point. The point is we're trying to grow the sport. We're trying to grow interest in the sport. And right now, 2 or 3 weeks into a season, we can rule out the Pac-12. We can rule out the Big 12. And we've only got 60% of the country engaged in college football at all. And I don't care if it's Clemson, Alabama, and either Ohio State or Notre Dame every stinking year. It can be those four if they happen to win the first round. But let's make it a little tougher. You know, let's make it better. And let's give the sport a real Cinderella story. But, I mean, what's not to like about what happened with Coastal Carolina this year? Or Cincinnati? Or BYU? Why can't these teams at the end of the year be playing games that mean something? I mean, it's wrong. It's just fundamentally wrong in every aspect. And it's got to change. Absolutely got to change. And as I said, it's not about who wins the thing. It's about access to the thing that matters. And treating these schools like second-class citizens is just fundamentally wrong. And I think ultimately the change will be made. And when somebody says, well, they'll just do it for the money. Yeah, well, okay, fine. Do it for the money. No. If you don't, I mean, that they need money.
Yeah.
Especially after COVID-19, they need money.
Right. We're talking with Tim Brando from Fox Sports here on Ruskin and Zach. I want to pivot to someone you know, Nick Saban, who has a chance to win his 7th national title against Ohio State, which would give him the most ever. And we're talking to a fan base here, Tim, in Arkansas, that's like the rest of the SEC West. They're just waiting for the Saban era to end to feel like you have a puncher's chance again in the SEC West. Do you think when he becomes the all-time record holder for titles that he'll think about stepping aside?
I used to think that. I really did. And I had conversations with Nick as recently as 2017. And I actually broached the subject of his being the czar for college football. You know how I feel about universal leadership and that we need the sport to have someone looking out for the greater good of the entire sport. Never were that more true than this past year when we saw, you know, 5 different commissioners go in 5 different directions to start the college football season. And I think that's something that he would really be interested in doing. He knows the problems that the sport has. Like, he's the only coach in the SEC that wants to play 9 games on a regular basis. So he sees the point that we need greater stability. We need all of these conferences that are in the quote-unquote Power 5 playing by the same rules, and right now they aren't. That may be something that happens that even he doesn't project once he gets his 7th. I think that new challenges are something that's always been a part of his makeup. Now, that changed a little bit when he got to a point where he was looking at legacy at Alabama. You know, to win a 6th there, which would tie him with Bear Bryant at Alabama, a seventh overall, which would make him the all-time winningest coach of national championships, albeit at two different schools, including LSU in 03. I would say that if he hit the pause button in the aftermath of winning the national championship, it could creep back into his mindset. But I think as we get older, and Nick is just a little bit older than me by about 3 years, I think we begin to start thinking about our legacy. And maybe in his own mind, that legacy has overtaken, you know, the next new thing. You know, sometimes the next new thing is on your mind in your mid-50s and your late-50s. You get into your mid-60s and your late-60s, you start thinking about legacy. So to answer your question, I'm not sure. But if he does get away from college football as a head coach, he would be, I mean, carte blanche. He would be given just the keys to the Brinks armored truck to be the number one analyst for college football on television, and he could also be the czar if he wanted to be. So it'll be an interesting decision if he so chooses. But right now, it seems to me as though his concentration has been on the program, the process, and continuing to win these things. So, you know, he might be around for – I know how I feel about my business. People are always trying to retire guys when they start getting entrance into the Hall of Fame. You know, I'm going into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame this year, and I've been nominated for – the National Sports Media Hall of Fame. I was on the ballot this year. Whenever those things start to happen, you begin to hear whispers about, hey, Tim, how much longer do you want to do this? Hell, I want to do this until somebody tells me I can't do it anymore. You know, I love what I do. And I think Nick has the same passion for what he does. So he may be around for a while. You know, he may be.
College football, I think if you remove Alabama from the equation, college football is fairly competitive, starting with team number two. I've made the assertion, like in the Notre Dame Alabama game, this isn't a Notre Dame problem. This isn't a Texas A&M problem. We have an Alabama problem in college football. It's yeah. Them, and then there's a gap, and then there's everybody else. What do we do with Nick? I mean, how do you close the gap?
Well, I mean, I think the gap has closed to some degree with regard to, forcing Nick to change his style. And he did, to his credit. You know, Clemson brought that out of him. You know, Deshaun Watson doing what he did to them and beating them. And then Trevor Lawrence blowing them out as a freshman forced his hand. And he became, you know, whether it was with Lane Kiffin or now Steve Sarkisian, this is an Alabama team that's hanging 50 on people, you know, and doing so with relative ease. Their defense has suffered, and Saban's, you know, he's a defensive guy, but he understood that, you know, you couldn't control the game anymore because of the direction the game was going. So he just loaded up with as many offensive weapons as all of these great teams that were known for their incredible wide-open style and run-pass option or RPO offense. He was fighting the RPO, you might recall, 6-7 years ago. He was trying to get rules changed to help defenses. He's gone away from that now. So he adapted. I think teams have caught up, and I do think when I hear there's no parity in college, that is, again, more hyperbole from those that are elitists and care only about their same teams making the playoff every stinking year. There's a lot more competitive balance everywhere in the country in college football than there was 20 years ago. A lot more. But the brand names are still the brand names, and that's the issue here. Those brand names being so big that fans don't want to recognize that they can be challenged. You know, it didn't surprise Nick Saban that he had to score 55 to beat Ole Miss. It surprised a hell of a lot of Alabama fans that they had to score 55 to beat Ole Miss this year. So in terms of teams catching up, they have in terms of the schemes that they run and a lot of the offensive personnel that they recruit, but they haven't caught up with the sustained success. You know, no, LSU had that one incredible year, maybe the best team ever, but, you know, Orgeron found out this year. How hard is it to sustain success, to load up on recruits and have so many that it doesn't matter who you lose. You know, Clemson's now done that. You know, Clemson has matched Alabama where that's concerned. Ohio State, I think, is not far behind. And, you know, a team like LSU could return. We'll see if Jimbo is on the precipice of something special at Texas A&M. But in terms of branding, your point is accurate. There's no brand any bigger than Alabama's right now.
Sam Brando's our guest from Fox Sports. A broadcasting question now, if I may, Tim. What is the origin of the Iron Unkind?
Oh, gosh. I was doing a game, and it was years and years and years ago, and the ball just kind of lingered on the rim. It was one of those round and round deals, and I think it was Duke and North Carolina State, now that I think about it. Chris Collins was actually playing for Duke. It was the year that Krzyzewski was out of coaching with a bad back, and Pete Godet had taken over. We had a situation where Collins took a shot to take the lead with about 8 seconds left. The ball at the front of the rim, the back of the rim, then it went around the rim and went in. And so I went, oh, the iron kind. It just came out. Okay. And then on the other end, a little guard who I can't remember his name, Grayson. I can't remember his last name now. Maybe Grayson Marshall. You'd have to look it up. From NC State, goes length of the floor with a running banker. It was like a long layup. And it looks like it's going to go. It goes round and round and round and out. And so we had an iron kind and an iron unkind at the buzzer. And people really loved it. And it just became a part of my lexicon. You know, I just kind of brought it to the forefront. And I managed to use it at least, you know, both of them, the iron kind and the iron unkind. Usually once a game. And I'm hopefully using it at the right time in a game.
Do you ever giggle when you hear someone use it?
Oh, it's used quite a lot now. I get the biggest kick out of it when it's a missed field goal in football now, and it's it's either the crossbar or the upright, and somebody says the iron unkind. I've actually said the upright unkind or the crossbar unkind. And people have gotten a kick out of it. But I noticed that what happens now is if the announcers don't use it, somebody on Twitter goes there.
Right.
And they show the replay and they go, iron unkind.
Yeah.
That's always fun to see. But yeah, when young broadcasters use it, it definitely makes me feel good.
Yeah, and I've also heard a couple of games where a team will be on a you know, on a scoring drought, and we'll get the iron downright rude from Tim Brando from time to time, which I enjoy.
Thank you. I'm glad you do.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. All right, Tim Brando, our guest from Fox Sports here on Ruskin and Zach, and
you're back in the saddle this weekend. You've got you had some COVID issues, and now you're back in the saddle, ready to go.
Yeah, I just learned just a short time ago that I'm cleared, and I'll be able to get back in the saddle and put the headphones back on to hoops. I managed to get through the entire season without testing positive until I finished my college football season at the Mountain West title game. I went to Vegas, and you know they say what goes on at Vegas stays in Vegas. Apparently not, because when I got home, I had COVID. I tested positive 2 weeks ago Monday. I tested positive, and I've been asymptomatic the entire time. And finally, got clearance to go back to work. I've got Michigan State and Purdue. Hell of a game.
Yeah.
Big Ten's loaded this year, as you know. Michigan State is at home against Purdue on Friday night. It's a 6 o'clock Central Time game. And then on Sunday, before the NFL playoffs get rolling on Fox, Donnie Marshall and I will have the Xavier-Providence game at 11 a.m. Eastern, which is 10 o'clock in the morning, 10 Central.
Tim Brando, Fox Sports, with us here on Ruskin and Zach. Well, we look forward to hearing you on basketball throughout the winter months. Thanks so much for the time, as always, Tim.
Thanks, fellas. Great being with both of you, and give my best to everyone there in Arkansas. Love coming there. It's just been a while.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Tim. Tim Brando from Fox Sports. We'll have Razorback basketball coming up next here.
The Razorback talk show designed for smart fans. This is Ruskin and Zach.
Ruskin and Zach show has been streamed in 139 countries, 50 states, 2 territories, and Cocaine, New Brunswick, Canada. You want to stream it too? It's ESPN995.com. Hit that line.com. I guess I can just drop the ESPN995 thing, right?
Yeah, it's pretty much over with, I believe, yeah.
If you got one of them Google Play Alexa dot things, just say, hey, play ESPN Northwest Arkansas. There we are.
All right. 866-285-4005.
I asked this question on Twitter the other day because somebody asked me yesterday. They were talking about, they listened to the show all the time, and said to me, he's like, how long have you guys known each other? And I said, well, we've known of each other for a couple of years because we used to bypass each other doing games. Mm-hmm. But I said, the first time we ever met face to face was the day you and I went to breakfast, and it took 3.5 hours. And we both walked away from the breakfast going, yeah, this is going to work.
Yeah, not because the service was bad, by the way.
No,
the service was great.
We sat down and it started.
Shot the bull for 3 hours.
That's the first time we met face-to-face, right?
Yeah.
It led me to a Twitter question. What do you guys want to know that goes on behind the scenes? I'm an open book today.
Okay.
What do y'all want to know?
It's
DQ's off the tie bandwagon.
Could you tell us the numbers from 3 to 7 p.m. for the...
Okay. Yes. Yes. Add the rest of them up. You ain't there.
Okay. Right. Well, I just have a completely different opinion on the basketball game last night than every other thing you've heard today. I know you're not surprised by that, but I just, to me, I'm not going to yell.
That's the third time you said I'm not going to yell.
No, it's a like.
Mark in the tape.
Like
so when you do,
I'm not going to yell.
That's.
But let's have a conversation here, okay? It's like, you can't blame the refs every time you lose. Because then you sort of sound like the loser, not the refs. Okay? And we're going to prove this theory. Okay? Because I will change my opinion on this if these conditions are met.
Okay?
The next time Arkansas wins, tell me all the bad calls in that game. And then I will listen to your criticism.
That went against the other team? They contributed to the victory?
Either way.
Okay.
I am exhausted with hearing about officiating after every loss and never after a win. So I will listen to your conversation about officiating if you can complain about it after a victory. That's all I'm asking for here. And I don't believe the free throw or the foul count had anything to do with this defeat. The fact that Arkansas had 20 turnovers that led to 19 Tennessee points is the reason they didn't win the game. That's my opinion on the situation. And the refs didn't have anything to do with people dribbling off their foot on the sideline.
No,
I don't believe. Now maybe, wait a minute, I think Alandis Poole did punch the ball away one time from Desi Sills. We'll have to get we'll look at the tape on that and we'll check. But I just think that when you go and you blame the refs every single time, you sound like a crybaby weenie. That's what I say. So,
well, it's become a crutch. Every single time they lose, it's because of the refs. Was the game physical last night? Yes. Here's a crazy idea. They'll turn it over 20 times. 20 turnovers will... In our pre-show fistfight how many teams turned it over 20 times in the game and still won.
It is convenient that the barking seals in the media are quick to point out the free throw disparity, but no one has the real answer I'm looking for today, which is who is the last unranked team to commit 20 turnovers in a game and beat a top 10 team on the road? When's the last time that happened? Because I'm betting it's probably been at least 30 years. And maybe longer than that. I don't know. But instead, we've got to gin up the base and talk about free throw discrepancy. And not the important thing, which is how are you supposed to win a game when you commit 20 turnovers on the road against the top 10 team?
Out in his press conference, which gets the seals started.
Mm-hmm.
He points out the free throw disparity. Let's not talk about the turnovers. Let's talk about the free throw disparity. Now, some of those were at the end of the game when Arkansas was fouling. Tommy brought up a great point this morning, which is when they go back and they watch the tapes. And I can tell you this because my brother-in-law is a professional referee. Those guys are more afraid of losing their job than making a bad call or trying to screw your team. When they go back and get graded on that Tennessee game, I guarantee you, those officials will grade above 95. I guarantee you they will.
And by the way, we're doing this the hard way because it's really easy to turn on the mics, cry about the officiating, get the phone stirred up, and then we can prop our feet up like it's Nancy Pelosi's desk in here and not do anything for a few hours. So we're actually doing this the hard way.
We're swimming
not
against
the easy
current
way.
Right.
But it's so hollow to me now when a loss happens and it's like, oh, free throws. I don't care for it anymore.
It's a lazy way of going about it.
And, you know, Musselman is, you know how you get a 10-minute cooling off period?
Mm-hmm.
You could give Musselman, he's so passionate about this stuff, you could give him a 10-day cooling off period and he's still going to be, still mad after a loss. So there's nothing you can do about that. That's just the way he's wired. It's why he's been so successful everywhere. But
Tennessee is a top 10 team for a reason. You're going to go in there and you're going to play them 10 times. You might win 2-3, something along those lines.
They covered the spread. Another interesting thing to me is that 24 hours ago when we sat here, everybody thought they were going to get killed over there. Like they're going to have a turbo clock in the second half. It was so ugly. And then they lose by 5 and everybody's like, hey, this is outrageous. We got screwed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You had a 7-point lead and you turned the ball over a ton. Now, I mean, we sat down. I posted the picture of it just as Jalen Tate was getting ready to launch the shot. I said out loud as I was watching the game last night after he made his first three that Tate was going to take the last shot. There was a missed opportunity on that last play, and I'd love to talk to Eric Musselman and see if Moody was the target. But they had a screen set to the top of the TV screen where Moody was about to rub off of it and would have been open for a wide-open three. Now, Moody did not have a good night last night. And freshmen are going to have those up-and-down nights. Freshmen hit the wall in about mid-February. But he had an off night in a tough environment against a good team. But I, personally, using my my therapy words, I feel, if I were the coach, I would prefer Moses Moody take the last shot to tie it at 77 or 79 than I would Jalen Tate.
But Moody had a rough night.
He had a very rough night.
When he put the cape on at the very end, I don't know.
And the last play, Moody would have had a clean and better look than Tate.
I think what happened is exactly what Jimmy Dykes said happened on the broadcast. Is Tate saw Tennessee screw up that switch, and for half a second, he's like, okay, I got it. And by the way, the sucker almost went down.
It almost wasn't like
he airballed it from out there. It was a little bit long, but God, it was on target all the way.
I always thought at the end of the game, you want your best player with the ball in his hands.
No.
And I think we all agree that Moses Moody is probably the best player on the team. The play was set up when they ran the screen, Vance Jackson popped off. He was also open. I thought he had a better matchup than Tate did. I thought Tate had two options or three options. One shoot, two pass to Jackson, three wait for Moody, and he chose the wrong one. He chose to shoot.
No.
But, no. You know, no. I mean, they went down, they played hard, they played well.
Yeah.
They played well.
They did.
That should be encouraging. You've played back-to-back top 15 teams, and they played well.
Yeah.
But the idea, and I mean, everything I heard today and last night was refs. It had nothing, guys.
Nothing to do with it.
You got to stop. That's a crutch. Stop. Mm-hmm. Look deeper than, well, the free throw disparity. Is it a point? Yes. But to, like you said, the turnover margin's the bigger issue.
No.
Here's another thing, and I don't know if the thinking on this has changed. They did this twice in the second half. Down 4, they're launching three-pointers from deep. I always thought when he got down 2 scores, the idea is to get back and get quality shots, and they put him up quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never thought that was the way to go about it. I think one of them, Musselman, he said something because one of them was from Vance Jackson. I think the other one might have been Tate. And where did Desi Sills go? Can you put out an APB on him?
Yeah.
I have not. Did he make it home from Knoxville?
Oh, yeah. He made it home from Knoxville. Yeah. Okay, so let's look at this. So this this great and massive free throw discrepancy that just ruined everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They had 10 attempts in the last 146 because, as you've said, Arkansas is trailing and trying to climb back in this thing, all right? So if you take... We'll do this the easy way, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Let's take... We'll take 15 of those away, okay? Because let's say you do get a free throw at some point. Okay, then the free throws are 11 to 10 attempted. That doesn't seem very lopsided to me.
Say that again.
Okay.
Slow it down for the people in the back.
Okay. Tennessee attempted 26 free throws.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They made 10 of them down the stretch in the last 146 of the ballgame, okay? All right, so let's take those 10 attempts away. If you do that, the free throw discrepancy, I'm sorry, I was wrong about that. It would be 10 to 16.
That's still not a huge discrepancy.
Does that sound like you got beat over the coals by the officiating?
So
at
what
that point?
You're saying is the narrative coming out of last night that there was this massive free throw discrepancy is a lie.
It's lazy and okay. And unprepared.
All right.
What it does.
Okay.
But, I mean, hey, you can believe, certainly now in 2021, you can believe whatever you want to believe. But from where I sit doing this, that's not why they lost.
Free throw.
Going to the sideline three times and dribbling it off your shoe is unforced stupid turnovers that you can't. I'm not going to yell.
Don't yell.
You can't commit 20 turnovers and win on the road against Roast Beef Teachers College. Much less the number 9 team in America. It's just not. It's not going to work.
So
sorry.
Does this make us A team now that we've pointed this out?
Oh no, we're now the C team.
Because we're going against the A team now. We're swimming against them. Okay.
Stop making fun of the fans. Do not do that. We're moving you to the C team.
Your reactions. We will read some of these.
People, now that you got that A bomb,
texts have been flying in here.
Mm-hmm.
10 to 16 would be the free throw.
That's not a disparity.
10 to 16. Hmm. Down the stretch. Hmm. And I didn't even look.
When you're fouling.
I didn't even look. Those are just makes. There may have been misses in there that I don't see here.
All right.
So. Okay. Ruskin and Zach.
Good point, host.
Good point. Good point, host. Thank you.
Host one, you nothing.
Think it, they say it. This is Ruskin and Zach.
Happy to have you with us, Ruskin and Zach. 26 in front of 5 on this Tuesday afternoon.
Coming up some Led Zeppelin, maybe some Yes. Yeah,
that's right.
Traffic on the 10s.
34 after the hour, 26 till the next one here on Ruskin and Zach. I heard somebody the other day, not in radio, use bottom of the hour, and I freaked out. I'm like, oh, this guy speaks radio.
Right.
Because nobody says bottom of the hour unless it's here.
Nobody uses those clocks anymore.
No, exactly. Even the schools don't have those clocks anymore. They're all digital clocks at the schools. Anyway, enough of this. We're wasting valuable time here. We have Andrew Hutchinson on the phone from hogbeat.com on what has turned into an active news Tuesday here around the Razorback beat. And so, Hutch, thanks for... sparing a few minutes for us. First off, they made the Kenny Guyton hire official not that long ago.
Yeah, I saw that as I was driving down the interstate heading to pick up my daughter from daycare. Seems like that is always when news breaks.
Yes.
But, you know, this was not exactly surprising. I mean, pretty much, you know, we got it confirmed yesterday or the day before, whatever it was. I mean, it all happened very, very quickly. You know, Sunday, you know, broke the... You know, Justin Stepp was leaving, and then seemingly within hours, they had identified the replacement and got him hired. So it was a very, very quick process. I was kind of impressed that Sam Pittman was able to get it done as quickly as he did.
Tyquese Crawford's back in the fold. He was originally committed to Arkansas. I believe he then committed to Texas A&M and wound up at UNCC.
Went to Charlotte, yeah.
And then is back. How?
Yeah, it's a wild story because, you know, he was originally committed to Arkansas. He's part of that really big 2019 class that had all the four-star recruits in it. That was fantastic. He was one of those guys that always was kind of not exact. You didn't ever feel super confident that he was completely on board. And when things kind of started going south in 2019, he decommitted. I don't know if he ever actually committed elsewhere, but I know at one point he was going to be heading to a junior college because that was always kind of the concern with him was that, you know, hey, does he have the grades to be able to make it, you know, and be able to play in the SEC? And then turned out very late in the process, he landed at Charlotte. I remember when it happened, it was very surprising. And so he ended up there. He actually played and started this year a little bit. He was a right tackle. I think most people view him maybe as a guard, but he played at right tackle. Didn't grade particularly well on Pro Football Focus, but again, he was playing as a true freshman or redshirt freshman, whatever it is that he is. I think it is a very solid pickup for Arkansas because he's got the size that Sam Pittman is looking for in offensive linemen. Obviously has the potential, you know, based on the four-star rating coming out of high school. And he's got several years to where he can come in and develop under Sam Pittman and Brad Davis, where I think he could, you know, develop into a really solid player for Arkansas.
How it appears that Barry Odom is staying, as well as Jamil Walker, the strength and conditioning coach, after listening to ovations from other places. Do we know how serious things got with those conversations? Do we know Barry Odom's getting a raise? It seems like we're still pretty early on in learning all that stuff, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think Barry Odom was definitely a serious candidate. You know, both I've heard that he was one of the top three options at LSU. Obviously, Texas, he was a serious candidate most recently. And so it wasn't looking good based on what we were kind of hearing early on that he, you know, was maybe going to, you know, be heading to Austin. But obviously the players today seem pretty excited that he's coming back. You would imagine that came with a raise. I'm not exactly, you know, 100% certain. I'm still looking into that and submitted FOIAs and all that good stuff to see if there is going to be a raise. I mean, he's already making over $1 million in Arkansas, which is a lot of money for Arkansas. So it'll be interesting to see what Arkansas is able to pony up. I mean, Sam Pittman was, at least this year, the lowest paid coach in the SEC. So you think that would maybe leave some wiggle room to and able to keep some coaches here if other programs come calling.
And Bielema's coming off the books because he's got the Illinois job.
You know what? I'm not even sure if that is going to affect Arkansas because, you know, they weren't paying him for one.
Well, that's true.
They stopped paying him, and there was the drama with the Razorback Foundation. Who knows how that's going to turn out? Plus, even if they were, I'd have to double check this, but I think the contract, like the payments would have stopped at the end of 2020. Anyway,
okay.
even if he was still getting payments. So I'm not sure if that really helps at all. I think the one they're still paying on is Chad Morris, and I think I don't know if there's going to be anything that'll knock that down.
Yeah. Hey, we've got a raging debate among the merry band of idiots. Have you ever cursed before? We're about 50-50 on the poll right now.
Not only have I did this morning around 4 a.m. when my one-year-old woke up screaming bloody murder. I said some things I cannot repeat on the radio.
All right. Well, I mean, Clay can repeat them.
Yeah, I mean, Clay can do it. You can do it.
Okay.
Okay, good to know.
I don't think I've ever heard Hutch curse.
And we're getting reports that you have sworn on the air.
Me?
Yeah.
Have I?
Not you. No, you're clear. You.
Okay.
Me?
Yeah.
When?
I'm working on that. I'm efforting.
Okay.
Anyway, is it my turn?
I mean, I've said the gateway words, but I've never said the big boy words.
The rumor is you went His Eminence.
Oh, I did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
All right. Sorry, Hutch. Sorry. Back to
football. Can I get a paid suspension out of that?
So we sort of understand, I think we've got a good idea what the roster is going to look like. I've asked you every time we get on with you, I ask you the same kind of question. Who are they looking for to sort of round out this roster? I mean, the transfer portal right now looks like a bus station. There's 100,000 people in there. And you can pretty much get what you need, you think.
Yeah, I think they're still obviously, you know, getting Crawford is one, and I think Sam Pittman said they could take up to four more players, and I would imagine most of those guys are going to come from the transfer portal, and I think they're definitely looking for some pass rushers. They got to find somebody that can get after the quarterback, you know, defensive end, you know, maybe two defensive ends, maybe another defensive tackle. They're looking for some defensive linemen. You know, they might add another offensive lineman. I think originally he said two and two, you know, two offensive, two defensive. But I think he's willing now that, you know, Myron Cunningham, Ty Cleary, those guys are coming back. The entire two deep on the offensive line is coming back. I think he's got a little bit more freedom to say, hey, okay, we've got Crawford. You know, that's a very good piece to add. Let's get some defensive linemen to contribute, you know, to this class. And I think that there are still some really quality options. There's new options every day, it seems like, popping up in the transfer portal. I saw where, you know, obviously it didn't exactly work out with Xavier Kelly, but I know Clemson's had a couple of, I think they had a defensive end and a defensive tackle, you know, four or four-star recruits enter the portal in the last day or so. And it seems like there's new guys coming in the portal every day. I mean, if you follow the I think it's Rivals portal on Twitter, they're posting just every 10 minutes a new guy that's popped up in the portal. And I think there will be somebody that Arkansas lands. It's just a matter of, you know, who's it going to be and how patient is Arkansas going to be? Are they going to try to get somebody right now and try to get them in for to go through spring ball, or could they even be patient enough to wait through the end of spring and see who enters the portal after going through spring with their new with their current team before entering the portal and maybe coming to Arkansas?
And we're talking with Andrew Hutchinson from Hogbeat.com, H-A-W-G, Hogbeat.com. This is probably a stupid question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. If they're getting someone out of the portal, it's someone that they want to play in the fall. It's not necessarily someone that they want to, you know, sit and develop for a couple years. Is that right?
At this point, with the defensive linemen, yes. I believe they're looking for somebody who can contribute immediately, whether it be a grad transfer or even now with the it's looking like the one-time transfer rule is going to pass where they could get a guy with, you know, 1 or 2, 3 years of eligibility left to be, you know, eligible to play immediately. I think with the offensive line, they were willing to bring in a guy that could develop, and I think that's kind of what you get in Crawford. He's still a young guy, only been in college a year or two. He's a guy that doesn't have to play necessarily right away on the offensive line. I know some fans are probably going to expect it just because he was a former four-star recruit, but he's a guy who could develop. I think at the defensive line, you want somebody who could come in and immediately provide a pass rush on that unit, and I think that that's what they're looking for.
Julius Coates, is he back with the program?
You know, he sent out a tweet today. I don't know exactly what it said, but it seemed to kind of indicate that he is going to be coming back. We haven't really gotten any full clarification from the coaches. Last time I asked Sam Pittman about it leading up to the Texas Bowl before it got canceled, and all he said was he's not going to play in the bowl game. And, you know, Sam Pittman is notorious for just kind of being very short about things he doesn't want to talk about. Mm-hmm. So. I'm anxious. Hopefully we'll get an end-of-season press conference where we can talk to Sam Pittman about all these topics, and we'll get an update. But it does seem, based on his comments on Twitter, that Julius Coates is going to be back with the program next year, which he could be that pass rusher they need.
Assuming Coates is back and bringing Dorian Gerald back, does that sort of indicate maybe to you that, you know, they're not terribly confident that they're going to get the pass rusher that they need and you kind of dance with the devil you know?
I think that right now they're just trying to get back everybody they can, you know, all the pieces. I mean, they know kind of what they have, Coates and Gerald. But I think they're still, you know, hey, let's try to bring in somebody new. But you can't always count on that. I mean, you brought in a bunch of grad transfers last year. I mean, obviously Felipe Franks was phenomenal. But how did it work out with, you know, Xavier Kelly, defensive tackle? You know, he was
a
backup. Yeah, exactly. He did not exactly live up to the hype. At least with the other guys. I mean, Dorian Gerald, he has been pretty good when he's healthy. But that's the problem, he's never healthy. He's missed pretty much all the entire year, the last 2 years, been banged up. And I think Julius Coates, you know, if he can, you know, get it all together, I think he has the potential to be really, really good. And he was coming on really strong there at the end of the year before he had whatever it was that kept him off the field. So I think those guys are solid building blocks, but I think they're still always looking to maybe add more pieces that could come in and, you know, maybe even be better.
Well, we're talking with Andrew Hutchison from Hogbeat.com. Another thing going on here with the Guyton hire is we're now, maybe sooner than we thought, we're in the period of the Pittman era where it's make or break time, because the ability to replace quality assistants with other quality assistants is everything in a lot of places, but certainly here, because it's what sunk Bielema. The staff around is crucial, and we're in that phase right now with Pittman hiring Kenny Guyton today.
Yeah, I mean, you hit it nail on the head with Brett Bielema. I mean, his first staff at Arkansas was really, really good, and I think that was one of the keys to Arkansas kind of getting things built those first few years. But then when they left, he replaced them with very subpar hires. I mean, look no further than Sam Pittman leaving and replacing him with Kurt Anderson. You can't have that happen. But I think that it's interesting. You know, whenever Sam Pittman hired his first staff, you know, one of the hires that I was a little bit skeptical on was like, ooh, I don't know what that is. What's that going to be like, was Sam Carter as a defensive backs coach. I mean, he had been a GA or whatever at Missouri, never been a full-time assistant coach in his first gigs in the SEC. Well, turns out he's pretty good based on what the secondary looked like this year and just kind of the praise that he's gotten from around the country. He's turned out to be all right, and that was a Barry Odom guy that he got to bring in. And it seems like Kenny Guyton is maybe a Kendall Briles guy. Got to work with him at Houston in 2018. Sam Pittman has kind of given his coordinators a little bit of freedom to say, hey, who would you like? Who do you know that is a good, maybe up-and-coming guy that we can get in here that's a, you know, a good recruiter, good coach, good, you know, what they're looking for? And I think that's an interesting thing, you know, given that freedom to his coordinators, or at least that's what it seems like, you know, on the surface.
Sam Pittman actually just tweeted out that I guess it's official now, Kenny Guyton. Now, he was the quarterback, or he was on the team that beat Arkansas in the Sugar Bowl, right?
No, but he was after Pryor, I think.
He was after Terrell Pryor as the quarterback. Oh, okay. Getting a question from one of our listeners here. How many spreadsheets do you currently have active right now? Because you're a spreadsheet guy.
Okay, so I've got two that are open just on my computer that are just documents, and then I have another one that's a Google Doc that's open in a window on my internet browser or whatever, so that's I guess three technically, but I've got that one that I have on Google Docs. It's pretty much, it rotates between, I don't know, three or four that any time I have pulled up, so I try to limit it, but sometimes I get carried away.
You're going to be Nate Allen before this is over, man. You're going to start slamming your head into your laptop before this is over.
How many tabs on the web browser? I'm looking at 8 on mine.
8?
Yeah.
So I usually have a Firefox tab open that has like 3 tabs, and then I have a Safari open that has anywhere between 6 and 8 at any given time.
Dude, get help. This is a disease, man.
I love it.
Get help.
This is great.
Dude, I mean, when you were sitting in English class at Springdale High School, you were like, man, I hope one day to have 17 tabs open in 4 different browsers.
Well, if I close any of them, I might forget what I'm doing.
I'm the same way.
I've got the email open. I've got Twitter open.
I've kept an article up over a weekend in my browser simply because I want to remember to talk about it on Monday. I've done that before.
Yeah.
So I'm with you on that.
I'll open it from Twitter and just have it open. So that way, whenever I have time later in the day to read it, I have it there to read.
Right.
Who's your favorite follow on Twitter?
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Give us a good one. Give us one to follow.
Oh, gosh. I'm trying to think on the spot.
The Rivals Portal.
Well, Rivals Portal at this time of year is fantastic. As far as maybe national, I can give you a national writer that I really respect and follow. Ross Dellinger from Sports Illustrated, I think, does a really good job. You know, I follow the Reddit college football account.
Seems reliable.
they find random tidbits from the Division III ranks. Something happens.
Well.
It's crazy. So I don't know. It's just interesting stuff. I try to limit the people I follow on Twitter because I don't want it to get clogged up. I don't follow a ton of players on Twitter just because.
Yeah, we've noticed the non-follow back, but you know,
I don't follow Ty Richardson, and he's upset about it. But I don't. There's not a lot of content there for me, so I don't. That's why I don't follow.
Enjoy top 10 lists of places I've gone pee.
Or pictures of food.
Top 10 places I've taken a pee. basketball tomorrow night. What do you got? This feels like Tennessee starting to pull away. Although Saturday, we had Wes Rucker on yesterday,
1-1.
Said it was kind of a blip, but it feels like it's Tennessee, and then there's everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, they're a legitimate top 10 team. I was shocked that they lost over the weekend, but I do think that was kind of an anomaly. I think they're really good, and I also don't think Arkansas matches up really well with them. I think Eric Musselman said it the other day that, if there was going to be a game that Arkansas went 3 of 23 on layups, he would have thought it would be against Tennessee because they're just so big and physical, dominant inside. They block a lot of shots. But they did that against Missouri, and so it kind of has me worried a little bit. Like, what are they going to do against Tennessee? They're going to really need to have the outside shot fall, in my opinion, to really have a chance. But it's going to be tough. I mean, this is a game I didn't think they were going to win in the first place, and then seeing how they played against Missouri didn't give me a lot of confidence. But this is a really, really tough start to the conference play. I mean, at Auburn, Missouri, and then at Tennessee, I'd venture to say that's probably one of the worst, toughest three-game stretches to start SEC play in a conference.
And next week they go to LSU and Bama. Yeah. It's just the hits keep on coming here. Can we get a Vanderbilt game somewhere mixed in here, please, for crying out loud? All right, Andrew Hutchinson, hogbeat.com. All the big news today, they got it covered for you, HAWG. Hogbeat.com. Thank you, Hutch.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, appreciate it. There you go. So he's got like 12 tabs open on the browser right now. How many you got open over there?
Four.
Okay.
And they're all work-related. And okay. when I leave here, I shut everything off.
Well.
And I put all my electronics away when I leave
here. I do that, too.
It's wonderful.
That is.
I haven't watched TV, and I watch the games, and that's it.
There's nothing on during the week, really.
I did not turn my TV on last night. It was awesome.
What did I do last night? Well, I watched the Manti Te'o thing on the DVR, but it was actually also on television live last night, too. But I recorded it Sunday, and I watched that, and I got on the tread for about 30 minutes, and then that was it.
I got on the tread?
Yeah.
That's treadmill for those of us that aren't Peloton people.
And they've got the teachers doing class on there,
right?
And I think I'm officially in now because I have sworn multiple times at the teachers.
Have you ogled any of the teachers?
They're like, oh, come on now, that's the whole reason to go in there. What are you talking about?
You're the one that said just gravel biscuits.
Yep. They're like 0.5 more. I'm like, oh bleep you! No, we're not doing that.
No.
We're doing just fine. We don't need 0.5 more. All right. Put your incline up to 7.
What? 7? What are we doing here?
All right. We will recap all the big news today. There's a lot of stuff going on. And we'll hit it all for you if you're just getting off work. We'll hit it all for you coming up next here on Ruskin and Zach. So don't go anywhere. Don't move.
No What?
The Bad Boys of Arkansas Radio.
This is Ruskin and Zach.
Yes, it is. 26 minutes, still 5. Ruskin and Zach. Talking a lot of hoops today, as you would imagine. Let's bring in an expert on this stuff. We don't know what we're doing, but Matt Zimmerman does. Color analyst, Razorback basketball broadcast, longtime assistant coach with us here on Ruskin and Zach. Coach, how you doing?
Hey, doing good, guys. Y'all both on today?
We're both here, yes, sir.
Yes. We've been here every day since the pandemic started.
Well,
we are the problem.
I took a few days off, but I mean, that's okay. It happens.
You guys are dedicated, and you love it, so that's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, appreciate you saying that. Well, I think we're going to get to some specifics questions as we go along, but to start off with, just kind of some general thoughts on what happened last night, Coach.
Well, obviously, there was a lot of good things that happened for the basketball team, but when you lose a game, it's hard sometimes to focus on the positives. but played much better than played in a game against Missouri at home. Obviously shot it a lot better, just played tougher, played much better defense, and did a lot of positive things, mainly with the shooting. The negative part and the reason that the Razorbacks didn't win the game was the turnovers. And, you know, to turn it over 20 times, you can survive that if you if your opponent turns it over 15 or 14 or 16. But when you have 20 turnovers and Tennessee Vols only have five, that's 15 possessions right there. We stepped on about every line that was in that arena, sideline, baseline, half-court line, and that came back to haunt us. But there were a lot of positives. Tennessee does have a good team, and it's not an easy place to play generally. I know everything's different this year with the virus, but, you know, the Hogs had a chance just right there in the waning moments of the game. And, boy, I thought Jalen Tate's three-pointer on that left wing was going to go in. It was straight. It just hit the back of the rim and came out. And if you go to that one, you got a real good chance of going to overtime and where anything can happen. But I think they walk out of there saying, hey, if we can do that here, we can beat anybody in this league.
Coach, I mean, if you look at the numbers, I mean, they shot almost 53%, 40% from beyond the arc, 8 of 10 from the free throw line. I mean, the turnovers were clearly the issue. How much of that is an Arkansas problem, and how much of that is just Tennessee is pretty good on defense?
Well, a lot of it is Tennessee is good on defense. I mean, Arkansas just didn't go out there and cough up the ball. A lot of it had to do with the aggressive defense, like Desi driving. You know, Desi's a strong guard. And like at one point, he drove in there, and one of their guys just took it from him. And that's not going to happen very often. You know, they tap the ball away from us a lot of times. But we did have the probably, I would say, five or six, you know, kind of the unforced turnovers where you step out of bounds or you catch the ball when you were just running out of bounds. And, you know, you just have to have a little more court awareness on that. And I'm sure that's something that coach is harping on those guys. And they'll see it in the video, which was probably all done this afternoon or sometime today. They were able to study that film and learn from that. And I bet we won't be stepping on any lines on Saturday against Georgia.
Well, Matt Zimmerman's our guest here from the Razorback Sports Network as we talk Arkansas basketball. I would think a big priority over the next couple of days is try to get Desi Sills and Mojo back. They need him.
Definitely need him. You know, he's one of your more experienced guys. He is the most experienced player wearing a Razorback uniform. And so, you know, some of those fifth-year guys are a little older than him and have played more games, but no one's played more games for him than for the Razorbacks as he has. He'll be fine. He just had a little bit of a slump, and it was surprising in the Missouri game because he was dynamite at Auburn. He's been playing so well all season, and he just had a game where he wasn't hitting. He was 1-for-10. He missed shots that he normally makes. And I really thought he would have a big bounce-back game last night. Unfortunately, it was kind of a little bit more of what happened on Saturday for him. He doesn't score, doesn't get to shoot it as much. And Arkansas's got a lot of depth. And so when someone, not just Desi, but when someone starts struggling more and they're not in a rhythm as well, Coach Musselman's got a lot of options there on his bench. And he's got 11 guys he can play. When Ethan Henderson's your 11th guy, that's a pretty good thing. Ethan's had some good games playing for the Razorbacks. Now with Justin out, you got 10 guys. And so there's still a lot of options. And I think that, you know, Desi said a little bit more last night too, because he just wasn't in the flow of things as well offensively. And I think he'll get back on track. He had a great game last year in Athens. We were down, I don't know, 15-2 or 17-2 or 18-4 or something like that last year. We were getting smacked, and he puts Desi in the ball game. He was coming off the bench at that time of year. It was late. It was March. And Desi came out and had a phenomenal game down there. And we lost in a really close game against Anthony Edwards in Georgia. But hopefully Desi can draw off that. I've played well against these guys. And, you know, no one will be more determined to play well Saturday than Desi.
It, with every game that we will get to see, I mean, another piece falls into the puzzle here. We're getting some, like, uneven performances. I mean, one game, you know, somebody will be great, and then the next game they disappear. Last night, Moses Moody goes 1-for-8 from the floor. That's really kind of the first time this year that he's really struggled. But Vance Jackson steps up out of nowhere, gives him 14 points, gives him quality minutes. Is this going to be sort of how it goes? Musselman's just going to have to ride the hot hand, whoever's hot that night.
Well, maybe a little bit, and the good thing is that he's got that depth that he's going to be able to do that. Obviously, Moses, who's been really consistent, he's your leading scorer. He's overall our most talented player you know, obviously he's going to be out there. He's got to be out there. He's a key part. He's not going to go 1-for-8 very often. And he got to the free throw line a little bit, but he's going to be okay. He had some shots that he normally makes, and they got after him. They guarded him well. And he's at the top of that scouting report. He's the number one priority to try to guard. And the number two priority people are talking about is J.D. Notae. And so Moses is getting a good defender. And one thing about Tennessee, they had a lot of 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", guys that can move and play defense. And there's been some games where Moses had 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", guys on him, and he's used his size to play well. And then there was a couple games where he had bigger guys on him, and they couldn't keep up with him. Where Tennessee was able to put really athletic guys on him, and it kind of bothered him at times. So, you know, he's going to be good. But you're right, there's times that somebody plays really, really well, and then the next game or two they don't shine as much. And so that's still just kind of trying to figure this out. And now you've played 12 games, and you know, going into your 12th game coming up. So hopefully consistency levels out, and you'll see those better players rising.
What are some of your takeaways from the league so far through most places have played, I think, 3 games or 4 games by now. What are some takeaways for you?
Well, I love to talk about the league. I can talk about it all day, and it's still all over the place. South Carolina played well last night. They hadn't played basketball in forever, and they won. They blew out A&M. I thought that was very interesting, and they've only played 5 games all year. And
wow.
A week ago, they were 1-2 overall. They played Florida A&M to get to 2-2. They finally played an SEC game last night, and they just blew out A&M. Made A&M look bad, and I was like, whoa. You know, Kentucky, don't forget about them. They're not as good. They're not as talented. They don't have near the depth, and they sure don't shoot it very good. But the dust settles on a bad non-conference for them, and they've won a couple games. You know, I wouldn't count them out. They're always interesting to see. I do think they probably will lose Saturday. They go down to Florida. Florida's got a pretty good team, not great, but they're pretty good. And really the one that has stood out is 3-0 Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing, now they can be really good as evidence of what they did to Tennessee, and they can be not very good, like when they played Western Kentucky and some of the other non-conference losses that they had. And they got beat 3 times in the non-conference, so they have struggled at times. What's really interesting to me is a week and a half into it, most people have played 3 games, and there's only 1 3-0 team. And I said before the league started, I thought 14-4 or 13-5 would win or tie for the league, the championship this year. Last year, the champion was 15-3. Champion's not going to be 15-3 this year. This is not going to be. They're going to be 14-4 or 13-5. And if you told me 12-6 tied for it, I wouldn't be stunned. It's got that kind of level balance to it.
I want to ask you about the last play because I've watched it 50 times today, and I just feel like Jalen Tate forced the last shot from 25, 26 feet. Take me through this. I mean, he gets to basically the pick with Vance Jackson. Jackson rolls off of him. They've got Moody and Notae to the top of the screen. Notae is setting the pick for Moody. Did Jalen force this? He took the shot with 8.5 seconds left. He put it up with 8.5. It just feels like there was an opportunity there to maybe work to get a better shot. And as a coach, I mean, do you want Moses with the ball in his hands, even though he's having a terrible night? I mean, you want the ball in your best player's hands, correct?
Yeah, you know, we're down 3 right there.
Yep.
So, you know, we got to have a 3-pointer because if not, if it's a 1 or 2 point game, I'm wanting to just get that ball to JD and spread everybody out and either come ball screen for him or just let him go to the basket. He's such a good finisher. But him driving to the basket doesn't do you any good when you're down 3. And so, you know, he can hit a 3-pointer, but I don't mind him driving it, but he's not shown so far that he's a great kicking it out to guys. And so, they're going to guard it a little different when they know you have to have 3. He got a good look. He got a clean look at it, and he shot it really good. I mean, he that thing was lined up. It just went back of the rim. Can you argue, yeah, we should have, you know, come off the screen or maybe set some screens away and get a guy popping out like Moses? Let's see if we can hit him. Or, like you said, Vance Jackson, I think, set the first screen.
And he had a mismatch on a smaller guy.
Yeah, you know, can you get Vance or can you get, you know, JD driving it a little bit and trying to kick to one of those shooters? You can always guess and second guess that. I didn't think it was a bad shot at all because he about made that thing.
It just felt like he had three options, and the rushed option is the one that he took, which is to put it up with 8.5 seconds left.
Yeah. Well, we did have time, but I do, you know, you can't wait till it's 1 or 2 seconds
right.
You're down three. You've got to go try to get or be able to get an offensive rebound and kick it out. A lot of times people score in those situations when the ball is shot early, like he did, and there's a scramble for the, see, they got a clean rebound.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a wild rebound, now you can hit that three off of a kick out where you're more open.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't come up with that rebound to make it wild. Because, you know, I've seen teams get off three or four threes in the last possession like that because the defense can't come up with the rebound. But unfortunately, a huge part of that play was the defensive rebound. And then, boy, we just needed one. We needed them to miss free throws. And they weren't shooting free throws good early in the game. They were missing front end of one and ones. They were struggling. But in the second half, Tennessee was drilling their free throws. And they weren't missing them. And that was a big part of it. And, you know, it was. I thought it was a good, clean game. I thought there was a very good, hard competition between both of them. Both teams fought. Both of them wanted to win. Both of them played very, very hard. And but it was an entertaining game. It was
yeah.
a really good game. It was an entertaining game. It was fun to watch. And the Razorbacks were within inches of winning that basketball game.
No doubt about it. Matt Zimmerman's our guest yeah. here on Ruskin and Zach. So. Spinning this thing forward, Coach, I mean, Georgia Saturday is huge. You're back in your building. You know, you want to desperately avoid 1-3 in the league, and you can get to 500. Saturday's a massive game.
Yeah, it is. Of course, all 18 league games are big. This one's no bigger than the first one or the second one, but you're right. Now you've lost a couple in a row. You got to get back on track. And I really don't like these kind of games. We're going to win the game Saturday. I feel that in me. But as a coach, I'd rather be going – I mean, I don't know if this makes sense, but when you play a Tennessee or somebody, you're so motivated because people don't think that you can win that game. So you're extremely motivated to prove them wrong, and we want to go there and win. And then there's a difference in that mindset. And then coming home, I think Georgia's finished 12th or 13th in the league the last 2 or 3 years in a row. They've been at the bottom down there with Vanderbilt. And so right now they don't have a league win yet this year, although they played LSU good. So now what's everyone thinking supposed to happen Saturday? Everyone's thinking, well, the Razorbacks are going to roll, which hopefully the Razorbacks will. But now it's a different kind of expectation in the game. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And now the pressure's on you. You can't, you sure as heck don't want to come home. And we're a much better team than Georgia. And we're playing them at home, you know. Hopefully, we just roll through them, and hopefully, that you know we get a nice, big, comfortable win. But you have to know it's not going to be easy. And Georgia's coming off of a tough mindset where they just lost a tough road game. That's discouraging for them. They hadn't won a league game yet, so you know this is an important game because you know the teams that you think are going to finish towards the bottom. Then you got to beat them, and you really got to beat them at home, and especially if you're wanting to stay in the race to win the championship. And Arkansas is not out of that race because, like I said, it's going to take the winner of this league is going to have 4 or 5 losses, and Arkansas's only got 2.
Coach,
so,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. You're good.
A lot of hand wringing about the low post defense. I mean, Tillman had his way last Saturday, and I thought they played better last night. Pons wound up with like 6 points. Fulkerson hurt him a little bit with 16-9, but it feels like this is going to be one of those areas that's sort of a work in progress. It's going to be under construction most of the year. Right now, that to me is like the glaring thing on their defense. I know Musselman prides himself on defense, but that low post defense has got to get better. This could be just one of those lingering problems.
Yeah, and the good thing is, of course, Connor is so tall. So Fulkerson's a fifth-year guy. I've been around a long time. But it was taking Fulkerson every effort he could to bend his knees and explode in the air just to shoot it over Connor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's got a nice touch. And a couple times he's able to drive by him where he didn't have to jump over him. But Connor's difficult. He's like an enigma for these guys because he's 7'3", and I know he doesn't jump 40 inches. We all know that. But even by jumping just a little bit, he gets higher in that air. It's hard to score over him. Justin Smith will help that defense. injuries are a part of all sports. You got to deal with it. There's other teams in the country that have injuries. Kentucky's had injuries. There's been people out around the country. So that's just part of it. It's not an excuse. But the team will get better defensively, especially inside, when Justin does return and whenever in a couple weeks or whatever. But it's I do think that the defense is still pretty good because Eves Pons, he's a good player. He was a pretty much a non-factor. In the baskets he had to jump up in the air and make a tough shot as well. Last year we go to Knoxville, they just threw the ball at the rim and they battled each other to come up with the offensive rebound and they went up and dunked it or we had to foul them and they lived at the – that wasn't the case last night. They had to really work for baskets.
Yeah. Well, it's always a great breakdown when we have you on, Coach. Matt Zimmerman, Razorback Sports Network, on the call with Chuck Saturday as Arkansas takes on Georgia at Bud Walton Arena. Thanks so much for the time, Coach.
Okay, guys. All right, nice talking to you.
All right.
Take care.
Matt Zimmerman, our guest here on Ruskin and Zach. There's a lot of good stuff in there, but there's two things that stood out to me. One, trying to explain the mental framework you have to get into because nobody understands. We turn the game on and we just start watching. You don't understand the grind of preparing for all of these 18 games and the ups and the downs and all that. And then the breakdown on the last play was terrific mm-hmm. about all the different moving parts there.
Yeah,
I thought he made it too. I mean, and he did. If you look at his reaction, he thought he
I'm not questioning the shot. You had three options on that play. It was Moody coming off the screen. It was Jackson off the pick, or it was shootage. And, you know, you're not driving. I just think for a 26-foot shot with 8.5 seconds left on the clock is just a little quick for me. But, you know, when Coach explained it, okay, now I understand sort of what the thinking is. And you should too. So if you were on that train where he shot it a little quick, now you know why.
Yeah.
And it's always nice to have guys who really understand the game rather than, you know, the bleacher bums in the last row yelling, foul, 3 seconds.
Yeah.
That was terrific. Nice to hear the explanation.
That was terrific. Always appreciate him carving out some time for us, Matt Zimmerman. And again, you can hear him Saturday afternoon here with the call right here on this radio station with Arkansas and Georgia. All right. It is, let's see here, couple 8 minutes till the hour here. Ruskin and Zach still kind of getting used to where I can figure out what time it is right now. But these are our problems, not yours. So don't worry about it. How about an SEC report, which is brought to you by Emi Catfish?
Started 11 years ago in a trailer in Benton, Arkansas. Now has locations in Benton, Little Rock, Conway, North Little Rock, and Fayetteville. They serve fresh U.S. farm-raised catfish, crab legs, gulf shrimp, po' boys, and more. Don't forget Mama's tartar sauce. It is a true family recipe. It's Emi Catfish, now open in Fayetteville. Tennessee officials haven't extended the contracts of assistant football coaches and have paused hiring coaches for vacancies as the volunteers continue to investigate whether recruiting violations occurred within the program. That, according to ESPN, earlier this week, the university announced it had hired attorneys Mike Glazer and Kyle Skillman to assist its in-house compliance investigation.
Oh, Jeremy.
Uh-oh. LSU is going back to the Joe Brady system to try to fix its offense. Tigers hired Carolina Panthers quarterback coach Jake Peets as their new offensive coordinator. Peets was on the LSU staff last year. Georgia promoted
Joe Brady might get a head coaching job in the NFL. He's interviewing.
Georgia promoting Josh Brooks to its full-time role as athletic director. The school announced that on Wednesday. Brooks has served as Georgia's deputy athletic director and took over the department interim role on January the 1st. And we may have a defensive coordinator down at Auburn. Derek Mason appears to be the front runner for Auburn, and Kellen Mond, after 47 years in the SEC, is going pro.
Oh, yes. There you go. That's right.
Your SEC report brought to you by Emi.
I confused Kellen Mond and Kellen Moore there for a second. I was saying Kellen Mond is at the Cowboys.
Still in
college. Oh, 47 years at the Cowboys.
Yeah, Kellen Mond has been in college forever.
Yeah. Well, he's gone now.
Yeah, he's gone.
And Auburn hired away South Carolina's offensive coordinator.
Yeah, Bobo.
I mean, Mike Bobo, not exactly the greatest offensive coordinator in the world, but hey, you did a little bit of damage to a team that's on your schedule this year, so I guess that's something noteworthy. And plus, Auburn's a better job than South Carolina anyway. South Carolina's not a good job. I don't understand why anybody would think otherwise about that. All right. More to come. What a day here. What a day. Ruskin and Zach.
Live from the center of the Razorback universe.
The only radio show Razorback fans need to listen to.
Unbiased and unafraid.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ruskin and Zach.
Ruskin and Zach. Here we go. 866-285-4005 to be in here on the program. You can do that. Let's see here. You had a text you wanted to read here?
Yeah, we're going to get into this. What's this? This is two texts, actually. Michael in Scranton suggests that he would like us to do a political podcast.
And,
no, that is the worst idea I've heard today. And I've heard a bunch of them.
Listen, that is such... God bless you, Michael. That's not going to happen. That's not... No. No.
Oh, no. We... Okay.
But you have, here's the plan.
We could do it. But
here's the plan.
We would like the building to be standing when we were done.
Here's the plan.
Everybody already hates us.
Yes.
So what you've devised is a plan where more people will hate us.
What we'll do is...
We're trying to go the other way.
We'll divide the people that hate us into two factions. And I don't necessarily want that. We could certainly do it. I think it would be a terrible idea.
It's not happening.
No.
It's not happening on my watch. No, I'm not doing that.
Robert Van Buren texts in, when it comes to ice cream, what do you think? The hard ice cream they scoop for you at a place like Brahms or the soft serve at Dairy Queen?
Oh, come on. This is easy. You get the soft serve out of the machine, and that's it. That's the only one. I mean, they're both. You are really. It's not like tub ice cream sucks or anything. I mean, it's really good. But I prefer the machine.
Now, what kind of a terrorist would choose a frozen custard over actual real ice cream?
It's not frozen.
It's out of the machine. You're right. It's not frozen. It's like number three is what it is. It's disgusting.
No.
It's disgusting. Oh, what are you talking about?
Are
you kidding me? Can you get Rocky Road out of a soft serve?
No.
It's vanilla, it's chocolate, and that's it. No, that's all you got.
That's all I need.
Incredibly. I don't use this word often. That's dumb. That's just dumb.
You're wrong.
And it is a new Ruskin and Zach Twitter poll. What do you prefer?
I'm going to go, you're so wrong, I'm going to go prop my feet up in your office and take a picture. How wrong you are. I'll tell you right now.
I don't understand the thinking.
It's ice cream.
It's like when the guy with the frozen meat truck comes around and goes, hey, you want to buy some steaks? Or you got this nice Kobe beef in your hand, and you're like, nah, you know what? Give me the stuff out of there that's got all the fat in it. No, it's not ice cream.
That guy in the Walmart parking lot that sells steaks.
Yeah, that has the, you know.
40, and rugs.
46.
He's got blankets and steaks. Yeah. So what the hell's that all about?
In a quart of wood. All in the back of his truck.
It's a quart, not a rick.
No, not a rick.
A quart. Got to get that right.
Right. It's 47 steaks for $29.
Yeah. I have fond memories of going to the Bonanza and getting your own dessert out of the machine and you
ice
pour
cream
it up
from Bonanza.
Oh, absolutely! That's what you do.
Okay, first of all, that's not ice cream.
Yes,
it's frozen milk. It's chunky milk.
Wonderful.
It is not
fond memories.
Oh my gosh, we used to go to we used to go to like Baskin Robbins.
Yeah,
and you're not from the Northeast, so you don't know what Carvel is. Carvel was
Carvel.
He talked like this and sold ice cream. He was awesome, and he used to make these cakes in the shape of like these snowmen. It had some goofy name or something.
Oh, did he have the Fudgy the Whale?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Okay, you know Tom.
I know a little bit
Tom
about
Carvel
him.
And the Fudgy
Come
the
Whale. Come to Carvel.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, if you're also from the Northeast, and you would know, remember the Crazy Eddie commercials, which was a front for the mob? You know, Crazy Eddie, his prices are insane.
No.
Oh, my gosh. They had this one guy. He was like a Coke.
The Wiz?
No.
Nobody beats the Wiz.
It was the precursor to the Wiz. But he would like have stereos, and he was selling like full stereos for like $19. Big stereo systems. It was a laundering front for the mob.
He goes
to jail and all that fun stuff.
I love local commercial pitch, man. And speaking of that, this is maybe a sensitive issue.
Uh-oh.
Did the guy that whips his arm around pass away?
Excuse me?
Remember the guy that would whip his arm around?
Did he, what was Johnny something or another?
Yeah, no. Did he pass away?
All right, somebody let me know if we just prematurely killed this guy.
You know, he was on Take Two fine. Video when I first moved up here, and then he moved on to the furniture place.
Right.
And then is he still with us? Because I really enjoyed his, he's got those eyes popping out of his head and selling you all this. Is he still with us?
I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
That you just prematurely killed someone, and that's $2.
I haven't seen him on TV in a long time.
That's right. I don't know if I can say this or not, but Text of the 479 just said they had Tom Carvel.
The cookie
puss.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
it was kind of a knockoff of Cookie Monster.
That's right. Yeah, yes.
Oh, I mean, that is my childhood in a nutshell right there.
Yes. Get the cookie puss cake or a Fudgy the Whale. One or the other. That's right.
Ron in Fort Smith would like you to be his first guest on his podcast so they can talk about Bonanza.
Yes, Ron, I'm down. Have your people reach out to my people. We'll set this up. I will do a Bonanza podcast. Absolutely.
What are you talking about?
Now a podcast I'll listen to. A Bonanza podcast.
Here's Kevin Brad Grove. He wants to know what happened to Dan Ivey. Dan passed away a few years ago.
Oh, he did? Mm-hmm. The Rebel Attorney?
Rebel Attorney.
That's right.
At the Dan Ivey Law Center. That's now a Whataburger.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And of course, we've talked about this before. We've talked about everything before. But we in Central Arkansas, and this guy is still around, they had a knockoff, like, you remember Ernest? You know what I mean, Vern?
Oh, yeah.
Well, they had a Little Rock Ernest who, like, dressed the same.
We got his number.
Yeah, he's still around. Yeah, he still does commercials, I think, too. But we had a Little Rock Ernest. And it was really confusing because in the 80s, Channel 7 actually had the real Jim Varney do some things about watch Channel 7. And then you'd have this guy doing commercials for Twin City Motors. And it was like, man, there's a lot of... That's how he said it, too. There's two different Ernests going on here.
Very confusing to a young child.
That's right. Yes, exactly. And my favorite, God rest his soul, Gary Weir, my favorite career turn in the history of Arkansas broadcasting is to go from being Bozo the Clown to picking horses on the Oaklawn show. That is such a wonderful... Wonderful deal. God rest his soul, Gary Weir. My childhood Bozo growing up.
That's a long career arc right there.
That's right. I mean, you go from hi, boys and girls, to we like number six here in the fourth, and here's Terry Wallace
scaring the crap out of little six-year-olds, so now you're picking horses.
That's right.
I'm sure Nancy Holthus didn't go that route. She went on some children's show. Nancy went straight to the top.
That's right. I loved that. I loved knowing that Bozo the Clown was doing the Oaklawn show. Like, I was so happy when I learned that. I was like, this is just great.
We're getting some feedback here. You're a terrorist.
Why?
Because people are with me on this, and they want the ice cream that you scoop out.
Okay. Fine, whatever. I mean, I'm not going to turn down the other one, but if you ask me what I prefer, that's what I prefer. I mean, it's like a blonde or brunette. I mean, you're not turning either of them down, but, I mean, what do you prefer? I mean, that's...
Yes.
Same thing.
Yes.
That's exactly. You prefer brunettes.
Yes.
Because you better.
Just one in particular. Only one. Thank
That's
you.
Right. Just okay. one. You know, the other thing. I got distracted by a deal. Yeah, Ron Sherman's still doing ads. He's got his own ad agency. That guy's he's made all the money down there. Come on now. Mm. He's done very well. Selling windows all over the country, whatever they're doing there. So that's, yeah. I can't think of any other famous local pitch men. Those are the only ones I remember. The ad men.
Is Ken Rank still around? He used to do the weather window on K-Pom.
People on the move. That's what K-Pom stood for. Do you know that?
When they got shut down.
That's when I worked. I didn't work there when they got shut down, but I remember what in the history. You know,
Neely was doing the weather.
You know what was weird about that place is one night I went down there.
How long do we have when you say, do you know what was weird about that place?
I mean, some other stories.
We could be here for a long time.
But we went, after they moved out of the Kelly Highway building, they moved into like a little part of it, and then they left the rest, okay? Mm-hmm. And the rest that they left was the old studio. So I went in there one day doing something. And someone was like, hey, do you want to see the studio? And it was like the nuclear holocaust. Here is a 1990s news set preserved in time that hadn't been used in about 10 years, just sitting in there. And it was so bizarre. I'm like, this is weird. So that was my Kelly Highway experience.
Ken Rank is no longer with us.
No, God
bless
him.
I asked the question. I didn't know. So I didn't prematurely do that.
No. No, I remember when Craig O'Neill was a DJ doing commercials. Yeah. Now he's been this accomplished newsman for 20 years.
Another career turn.
He would do commercials for all kinds of stuff, and he'd always wear a tuxedo with a red bow tie, and it was just
always a little overdressed
on KKYK
with shorts.
No,
with shorts and flip flops.
The tuxedo shorts with the stripe down the side.
The first time I ever saw that, I was working at 29. And I went to, we were doing, what was the thing that you did on Sunday nights? Sunday Night Final? Is that it?
I
was
there. Sports Final?
Sports Final. Yeah. I was there for the beginning of that. Mm-hmm. And Blair Cartwright was doing the late night. And I ran down the stairs and I was like throwing scripts at him or something like that. And he like stood up and he's got a jacket on, the shirt, the tie, and like no pants. And I went like, oh, no, dude, and I
went in there.
And when you're doing Sunday Sports Final, you do it after the news. It was like 30 minutes after the news, so everybody left, and Blair is not wearing pants. And he stood up, and I'm like, hey, man. Put some pants on.
So, you know, we used to be like kind of across the street from the building there on what was that, church?
Church, yeah.
Yeah. And we had to go over there and get something or give them something or something one time. And I went in there on a Sunday, and they're getting ready to do Sports Final. And they got a sports anchor sitting over there with one of these. They used to have these big machines that were like laptops, but you could edit videotapes on them. They're laptop editors. Yeah. He's sitting there with no shirt on. Editing
the dude, sport. I'm telling you, that building was, it's just weird stuff happened in that building. Weird stuff happened in that building. And the crazy part was, now the sports office was across the parking lot in the back of a funeral home.
That's where I went.
And the thing was, the mortuary was on the other side of the wall. So you could hear what was going on in there. Like, you'd be in there editing a tape or something, and you'd hear them banging away on a dead body in there, and you're like, what is going on?
I know.
It was great when they'd like walk through and they had the little stuff under their noses. Looked like, you know, they were coming out of a crime scene, the gloves on, the apron, and the little stuff under their nose. They're like walking through the building.
Yeah. I remember one time, I had a friend that was a producer over there, 29, in that building. And I remember the first time I went in there, because we were going to meet and then go to Dixon or whatever. And I'm looking around this place, and I'm like, this is it. Like, there's cinder block walls. Yeah. There's a men's room that's roughly 3 feet wide. Yep. You can't open the door. You're going to hit the sink. I mean, that was a trip, that place, man.
The best part, now, if you remember that building, and this is just for you and me, you like, you know where the newsroom was. Like, you'd walk in the hallway, the cameras, like the camera rack was here. You'd walk around the corner of the newsroom. You'd go up the ramp,
mm-hmm.
and then if you turn left, you went to the studio. To the right was that bathroom.
Yeah.
And at 5 o'clock, it was hysterical, because there'd be like 7 people jammed into this bathroom that wasn't any bigger than this, and they're all fighting for mirror time and trying to put their makeup on. They've all got their IFBs on, and God forbid they touched each other.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, you would start a fight.
How did we get from,
I don't know,
ice cream preference to old TV newsroom stories here? I have no idea.
I can tell you, the day I got shot at. Yeah, this I get it. I used to work weekends, and I would one-man band on the weekends, right? Yeah. So I get it.
One-man band, boys and girls,
radio.
Is when you run the camera all by yourself. There's no help for you.
So I get, you know, remember the old scanners that they used to put on the front? We used to call it the pig rig. It was the 29, like, we used to, I can't remember what the Isuzu something or others, but they had the scanner on there. And you would take like a home scanner with you. I mean, you look like Buck Rogers or whatever. And that thing goes off at like 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and it's the Springdale police. They got a shooting in downtown Springdale. So I get the address. I jump in the pig rig and I take off.
Yeah.
So I get to I beat the cops there. So tires screeching. And like, I get to, I like stop the car, and I don't know which house it is, because I can't see the house numbers, but I'm like directly in front of it. And I get out, and all of a sudden here, pop, 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 pop. I'm like, holy! And I'm like, crap! I'm like down in front of the wheel well. I don't know who, the guy was in the backyard, like shooting the gun or whatever. But just, man, back then it was like the wild, wild west.
I know,
and I don't know. I'm sure it's a much more professional band of people that work in that.
Well, now they pull pranks on Darby Bybee over there.
We went out one night. We were doing a live shot, and the guy who was running the sat truck forgot to drop the mast, and we ran right through the power lines.
Oh my god!
Oh my god!
That's a quick way to die, right there.
I got back to the station, and Cliff, who was the GM of the time, God bless him. God, he put up with so much. He's like screaming and yelling. He's yelling at me. I'm like, dude, I didn't drive the thing. He's the one that did. Oh, it's just a mess.
I can't believe some of the stuff that the live shots. Live shots are so the. This is going to sound weird. The kids today don't even know.
No.
Because you've got this relic of a truck that you've got to go. There was a flooding along the White River down towards Elkins one time. And so we wanted, my reporter wants to get down there close to it. So we run the cord. We're off on the side of the road. We got no cones, no flashers. We could have been sideswiped like that. And I'm looking at this deal, and I got one wheel on the road, one wheel on the grass. I'm trying to put this, 20-foot mast up in the air. This thing's going to tip over. We're dead.
Yeah.
And then we get there, and we do the thing, and nothing happens. Now it's, okay, let's get out of here. It's time to put the mast down.
Mast ain't coming down.
No.
Mast not coming down.
Never.
I've got the down button going, and it is still up. And I'm like, well, huh. Luckily, my reporter had been a photog in Oklahoma City a long time ago. So he just starts rocking the, like jumping on the bumper of the van. And then the mast drops like three sticks in a row. I'm like, oh, now it's really
coming. All right, here we go.
But we got it down. It got out of there.
You ever go on a
how are we going to get this thing home with the 20-foot deal in the air? Like, how are we going to do this?
Have you ever gone on a live shot and you start questioning why you're here? Patrick Rohde, who was Ken Perry's speechwriter, I think. He works in politics.
Every day I shot news, I questioned everything.
Patrick was he's one of the smartest people I've ever met. He works in politics down in Texas. And his wife, Leslie, is former Miss Arkansas. Patrick and I are over at the Springdale Convention Center. We're at a Star Trek convention.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right.
And you know how it is in those minutes when you get everything set up, right? Mm-hmm. And you got you basically got 30 minutes to kill. The lights are on. Everybody knows you're there. And he is standing there and he is questioning his career choice. And I'm like, Patrick, they're rolling. They can see you. This was played on a Christmas party tape for like 11 years. Was him questioning why he's at a Star Trek convention. And you'd see the guys dress up like the big warlocks. They'd come in and they'd stand behind him and
get some Klingons back there.
Klingons are looking at him. And he's just, and one time he...
Oh, my God.
He looks... The guy walks behind him, and he was dressed like Mr. Spock. And the guy stops, turns, and he's sitting there, and he's talking to Patrick. As the guy walks away, Patrick looks at me. I'm standing right behind the camera, and I'm beat red, and I'm laughing. And he looks at me, and he goes, "Now this is a visual. None of you will get this. Only you'll get this." He goes, "Spock, how long?" He's in there going, none of these people.
Tell me when they interviewed Spock, they put on the little graphic on the bottom, Mr. Spock in quotes. Please tell me that they did that.
Tell me when you used to do the man on the street stuff,
I hated that.
Oh my gosh, I used to make it. It was one of my favorite things to do because I would go get the most homeless, disheveled, just Ben Grizzly Adams looking person I could find. And ask him political questions. Because that's what you do. It's when you're
it's like Robin Williams and the Fisher King.
Exactly. Please find me the most ridiculous looking person. You're in a furry outfit. Right. Come here, I need to talk to you.
God, what you don't realize about those man on the street deals is you have to ask 15 people to get 3.
Yes.
Because you're going to get
because they all say no.
I don't want to do that. And so you hang out at some gas station because that's where people are usually.
Right.
You're like, hey, you want to talk? No.
Yes.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
And as soon as you got the third person, you're boom, out of there. I mean, you got to go. I mean,
we used to do these things at the end of the broadcast, and I got so sick of doing them. They would tell us we had to go out and get B-roll for the end of the news center. Right. So you're running the credits, and they'd always tell us to go to Mount Sequoia. I'd go to a gas station, and I'd shoot a gas station. I'm like, oh, this is what I got. It's a wonder I don't work in television anymore.
B-roll of someone at the local Chevron.
I can remember the news director screaming at me. I'm down by the Stop and Rob on right across from Chick-fil-A, right across from the university.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, I shot 4 minutes of just people going in and out of the gas station. I was worst.
We know why your photojournalism career didn't take off now.
We went down. God, I can't. His name was Tom Brown. He was doing, he had this marijuana church down in Madison County. Go figure. So myself and Chuck Martin, who is the voice of Texas State Radio, his wife Lisa and I go down there. Now, I am 20 years old, I think. I've never been to one of these things. I got a contact high from all the stuff that was going on. So Lisa and I are we're rocking on the way back. I mean, we're not feeling particularly good. We go, we shoot the story, we do the interviews. I get back, all my video is blue. Now, for those who don't know,
I didn't white balance it
because I was high, apparently. So, we're trying to fix
filter one.
We're trying to fix the video. We're trying to tell the people in Fort Smith what happened.
Yeah,
and boy, I had the worst headache that night. Oh, so hungover. He offered. This is the problem. Is we went down there and he's like, "Hey, you guys hungry? Do you want some brownies?" I didn't know any better.
See, there you go.
I had no idea.
Would have happened to anybody though. I mean, honestly,
but she did too. She went to Brown. Yeah. She's an Ivy Leaguer.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember.
Oh my gosh.
I remember on a bowl trip, our GM on New Year's Eve trying to wrangle everybody so they'd be up for the 5 a.m. morning show hits.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, that was an adventure.
No way.
And, what's the other thing I was going to tell you? Oh, I remember in the olden days, kids, everything was analog tape. And to send, like, we had to send video down to Little Rock over the fiber pipe for every night for sports. And you couldn't just, you know, attach a clip and email it. FTP, none of that stuff existed in there. So you had to actually get on a phone with somebody. They pressed record and you pressed play. That's how it worked.
Yeah.
So we are getting, and there's only one pipe down there. So at 10 o'clock, the news comes on. So you can't use the pipe anymore. So we're getting to like 9:58 and I'm on the phone. And some moron down there in Little Rock is just like hemming and hawing. Hold on a second. I've got 6 minutes of video to feed in 2 minutes. This is not happening. This defies physics, what we're about to try here. Are you recording? And I'm screaming in the phone, are you recording? And they record it. They get it. I get off of there. The news is starting. There are cam ops that make like $3 an hour, like kids, that are like seeing this madman scream. I run behind the news set there, and I kick a trash can, and I threw a tape and busted it. And these kids are like, "What? This man's lost it. He's gone crazy."
Did you ever do? We used to do Friday night flights, and I'd never ridden in a helicopter before.
No, we never did helicopter.
I've ridden in a helicopter one time because there are helicopter pilots, and when they find out it's your first ride, they think it's a lot of fun to make you think you're crashing.
That's right.
We were going out to Prairie Grove. Like, we're flying out there, and he starts, like, hitting the thing, and the helicopter starts shaking, and I'm panicking anyway.
Right, yeah.
He's like, oh, my God, there are power lines down there. We're going to die. He's, like, slamming this thing into the ground. And I turn, like, I get out, and I've got to go shoot, like, 30 minutes of this game, and right. I'm shaking. And he looks at me, and he goes, "I'll be here when you get back. Don't worry about it." He took off. I mean, the minute I got out, he takes off. And I'm like, "Where the hell are you going?"
We went to Subway.
He probably did. He was just up, you know, zipping around. He was joyriding for all I know. It was like Dennis Quaid or Randy Quaid.
Oh,
in
wow.
What is that alien movie?
Men in Black.
No. The alien movie.
Independence Day.
That one.
Randy Quaid.
Yeah, him. I get him confused. What's the difference?
Cousin Eddie.
First and last time I rode in a helicopter. I was so scared.
All right. We've gotten a few texts that enjoy this, so I hope you've enjoyed this.
One of these days, we're going to do the uncensored podcast where we can tell you about shooting a surgery and both of us going, "No, we're out. We're not doing this. Mm-mm. Nope, not doing this." Being offered Bam Bam coming out of a Christmas party. Yeah. We could do that.
Yeah.
It's got to be more riveting than an A-list Arkansas media member.
That's right, Dad. If this segment was an A-list, I don't know what to tell you.
Because it's most likely about the A-list.
That's right.
Arkansas media member.
Yeah. Robert and Van Buren, RIP Bonanza. Yeah, I know, right? God, I love Bonanza. You get those, I love the potato. I've never found potato skins like that again in my life. I don't know how they did it.
At Bonanza?
At Bonanza, on the food bar. Yeah.
You have eaten in places that serve bacon in a glass.
I have. But my lifelong quest is to find... I have two lifelong quests. To find potato skins like Bonanza again. And then there was this candy bar that was at the place we would vacation as a kid. And I don't remember what it was, but I want to find it somehow. I don't know how I'm going to do that since I don't remember what it was. But I got those are my two things I got to accomplish.
25 minutes have come and gone already?
Wow. What a day, huh? What a day. I didn't even get to talk about... this moron that get fired for over a tweet in Chattanooga.
I think I'd rather talk about sports anchors with no pants.
Most of them don't wear pants.
I know, that's the crazy part of this.
Oh, wow. All right. We will be right back. 866-285-4005. If you want to get in here, do some poll questions coming up. Stay where you are.